Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream. This podcast series is supported by the Manx Motorcycle Club, which runs the Manx Grand Prix, and also the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man. And the links to both of those organisations are on the podcast page, so do take a look at them. Our guest today is Callum Pert. Now, he's a road racer who made his debut on the Isle of Man last year for the Manx Grand Prix. He did great things over here this year, and there is so much more to come from him. I talked to him about his career so far, but also first of all about where the love of this sport came from, and it seems that his dad Ian Pert, another well-known road racer, has a lot to answer for.
Yeah, so my dad raced, I wouldn't want to guess when he started racing, I'll probably end up calling him really old, but raced for years before I was born and retired just as I was born, and then got back into it but when I was 9 years old, and then a few years after that he started competing in the Manx Grand Prix as well. But my uncle also raced in the TT when I was really young, so it's always been around. I've always been around that sort of stuff. The bikes have definitely always been my life. As soon as dad started doing the Isle of Man, it was kind of like I seen it, that's for me.
And what was his reaction to that when he realised that you were so into it?
I'm not sure what his reaction was like when he realised I was into it, but I know that when he knew I wanted to go and do it, my mum was never too keen on me doing it, but he knew that if I didn't help me and support me with it, I would just find a way to go and do it myself, whereas they'd rather be there and support it than me to go and try to do things myself. So they've always been really supportive of it and stuff.
And so how did it all start out for you then? What sort of things did you initially start doing?
I started riding trail bikes. When I was 15, I think. I'd never actually sat on a proper motorbike until my first time on the racetrack when I was 15, 16, on a GS500, Suzuki GS500. And I was on that for about a year or so, and then ended up with CB500 when I came over to do the Jerby Endurance Race. I was supposed to be doing it on a NC30, but the bike wasn't ready. When we were over there, we'd seen a CB500 sitting in the back of the boys' garage, and we were like, we could do one of those anyways. We ended up buying that on the island and converting it into a race bike there, and then race it in the insurance race. Me and my dad as a team brought it back home, raced that. And luckily, a boy, Alistair Cowan, eventually got me a really good CB500. And since then, Alistair's been supporting us the whole way and all that. And if it wasn't for Alistair, we wouldn't be able to do things like the Isle of Man and all that. A lot of people know who Alistair Cowan is, obviously.
And that's what we always hear, Callum, I think, is that there are some people who are just instrumental in helping you get started and also in this sport keep you going as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of names that I couldn't be doing it without. You've got obviously the Alistair Cowan. There's a boy, Davey Deck. If it wasn't for him, I would have never had an NC30 in the first place. And I would have never got the results that I got back in Scotland to have been able to get my first entry for the Manx Grand Prix. And obviously everyone else has helped us get to the Manx Grand Prix as well. Everyone that's involved with Heads Up, and my mum and my dad, just everyone.
We'll talk a little bit more about Heads Up a little bit later, but obviously you mentioned Scotland there. What's the racing scene like where you live?
It's really good. There's two tracks, well, technically three, because I need three to run a Scottish Championship, but one of the tracks is a Knockhill reverse and you've got Knockhill normal direction. So it's just basically two tracks. But it's brilliant. It's like a lot of racing communities, like the Andreas Racing Association, will be the same. It's like a family and everything. Everyone's there to help each other out and all that. Everyone's supportive. It's really good, and it's really competitive as well. The classes just keep getting bigger and bigger, and everyone just keeps getting better. Scotland is a brilliant place to race.
And have you got a lot of people around you who are sort of into the same thing? Have you sort of build up the friendships that way?
Yeah, I've got a good group of pals that are racing, but also my best mate from back home, Finlay, he also comes over and does mechanicing for me on the Isle of Man and stuff. He's another one that if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I am now. But he races bikes as well. We grew up together and stuff around Brechin and Edsel. But he races his cell. He's got a 600 and stuff. Finlay's brilliant, and he's a good rider as well. But he's definitely a big support.
So you start off then doing what you were at 15, and that was your sort of first taste of doing it competitively. Were you into the schooling side of things? Did you have another career plan possibly in mind?
No. Bikes was always my career. I mind always growing up being asked in the career advisors meetings in high school and everything. What do you want to do when you're old? I was like, bike racing. You can't do that. It's not a real job. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. Kept getting told it's not a real job and everything, but still, it's all I ever wanted to do. It's all I've ever wanted to do.
And so when you left school then, what did you do?
I ended up working in the slaughterhouse for 2.5 years. Then I left there eventually, and now I work at an agricultural tyre fitter. So I've been doing that for the last almost 3 years now. I'm just trying to do anything to make money to be able to keep racing. That's it.
And is that okay, sort of giving you the flexibility? Because obviously doing what you do need to go off at various times of the year to go off to race and whatever. Is that something that you can make happen?
It's not very easy with the job that I've got at the moment, because obviously, well, where I was, I'm changing job at the moment. I'm still doing the same thing, but I'm going to go to a different company. I always had to work Saturday, so I was 6 days a week. So for the first couple of years when I was there, I was having to use all my holidays just to take the Saturdays off to go racing in Scotland. But then that didn't work, so I needed my holidays for doing things like the Isle of Man and the road racing and all that. So then I had to work out a deal then that I could get my Saturdays off. So I was just starting earlier in the mornings on race weeks and stuff so they could make up the extra hours. But luckily where I'm moving to now, there's no Saturday shifts. So I'll not be doing that. I won't have to use my holidays and things, but I'll need to use them for the Isle Man. But I wish there was a job where I could work around my racing a lot more. But the kind of money that you need to make to be able to keep racing, you need to be working all the time.
What would be your ideal job then?
Racing bikes fully professionally, that'd be pretty nice.
And do you think that's ever on the cards?
I'd like to think so, but I just got to take it as it comes. I'd like to think that one day I could get to that point where racing's just my whole life, but we'll just take it as it comes until then. Keep doing what I'm doing.
And you know, Cam, again, we talk to other riders and touch on the sacrifices that are made. And you're going to know this firsthand because I'm sure your dad will have been through exactly the same things. But, you know, there are things that you must see other people your age doing and the holidays are going on, the nights out and whatever. Do you ever think about what you're missing out on?
Not really. I more think about what they're missing out on because none of them will ever experience what we're experiencing as riders. Like, there's no feeling like that feeling of coming down Bray Hill. There's nothing else I can compare to it. So I don't think I'm missing out on anything at all. I'd pick this life over any other life any day.
And what do you think that younger Callum, who sat and watched his dad go out around the mountain course, would think about what you've done already?
I definitely think I'd be very excited to know what's in the future for me. Like, I'm very happy with what I've done already in my race career, especially on the Isle of Man. How last year went to how this year's gone now. Yeah, I'm blown away with how it's been. And it can only keep getting better as well.
Yeah, so 2024 was your debut here at the MGP. You were supported by, amongst others, the Billy Redmayne Foundation. And we did do a short interview at that point with some of the other newcomers who were alongside you. Obviously, we know it didn't go fantastically well weather-wise. And I think, was it only four laps you managed to do during that whole week?
Yeah, four laps. And one of them was the first sighting lap when you were guided around by the travel marshals and the instructors. So three proper laps. I think I only got one flying lap. And yeah, one of them was a sighting lap. So then I got more laps than that just on the first day this year.
That's insane, isn't it? I think the difference is just so stark. But I mean, despite the fact that 2024 wasn't exactly as you would have hoped it to have been, all the preparation and the money that would have gone into that, there was no part of you that questioned coming back the next year.
No, absolutely not. It was frustrating because I knew that I could do more. I knew that I could be quick. I just wanted to have the opportunity to show it, but I never got the chance to get out and properly get my head around the track or anything, like the few laps that we got. And then obviously with the bike breaking down as well a few times, never had the chance to really show what, I mean, you can't really push to the absolute limit until you've been here for a few years at least. So obviously I'm still not even there yet, but first year just getting those few laps, I didn't really get to show what my potential was, I didn't think. Whereas this year, I think I've kind of done that a lot better.
And it must be really difficult because I think your race ended early at Quarterbridge, didn't it? And you talked about the sort of the mechanical issues and whatever. I wonder how you recover mentally from that disappointment.
You just can't really let it get to you. I mean, these things happen, especially racing bikes in the classic TT and all that. It's all older machinery. Like, the bikes are absolutely fantastic, but it's just old things, isn't it? I mean, the reason the bike ended up breaking down was because there were some damp cables because it was raining the night before. Like, that's what caused the bike to break down. There's things like that. You can't really avoid that. Like, it just happens. So it's nobody's fault. The bikes are built brilliantly by things like Alistair Cowan and Slick Bass and all that. But these things just happen. Not let it get to me. Know that we'll be back after and we'll come back even better.
And you certainly did that this year. You were in both the Super Twin and Junior MGP. You got two 17th place finishes, lapped at over 109 miles an hour. Was that everything you had hoped to achieve?
I could never have expected that. I can't lie. Never have expected it. The only reason we ended up in the Junior and the Super Twin is because I entered the wrong class. I actually was meant to be in the Senior and the Super Sport races. But me being me, didn't read the regs properly or the entry forms properly, which I'm not going to do again this year. I'm going to sit down with somebody and do it with them. But yeah, I ended up joining the Junior by accident. Didn't get the entry from a 600. We don't even own a Junior bike. Like, that bike that we got, luckily, it was Bruce Coburn gave us it for a shot. I'm very grateful that he did, because if it wasn't for that, then I wouldn't have been out there and done what I did. And I think the fact that I was out on the 650 instead of going straight to the 600. A bit of that slower bike's definitely going to have helped bring me on more. So I think we're going to be back on that bike next year. But just an accident, I ended up in that class. So I'm more than happy with how it went.
I love that. But it does show, I think, Callum, just what goes into making these entries. Because it's not just as simple as rocking up with your bike, is it? There's all of those regulations and everything you say. And I guess when you are so bike focused, that must be a difficult part of it.
Yeah, it'd be good if I was better at reading things or having patience to sit and read things, which I did get in a bit of trouble from my dad and that for not doing it properly. But luckily everything worked out, but I can't risk that every year and just hoping it works out. So I'm going to need to actually sit down and start doing things properly myself. Well, not myself. I need somebody to help me with it.
So as we're speaking sort of October time, at what point does that process start for you?
Well, it started as soon as I got back from Isle of Man. It was it straight back on the revision. Because I feel like when it's been fresh in the mind from actually being there's no point in taking that break just to forget about these little bits. So you may as well just keep it going, keep the revision going with the track, because you never want to forget anything on that track or it'll bite you. So it's already started. And then the bikes are already getting prepped for next year and everything. Alistair is already getting bits for the NC30 and all that for next year as well. The ball's already started rolling. We're just waiting for the entries to open again now.
You compete, you mentioned some of the other circuits that you do, Oliver's Mount being one of them, and really strong championship finishes in the Scottish Championships as well. And you were at East Fortune last month too.
Yeah, I was at East Fortune. I was out on the 600, the NC30. I actually just won two championships that weekend, the Junior Post Classic. So I was really happy with that. So funnily enough, it's about, I think we raced 7 years now, but that's the first time I've won the championships. So it finally worked out. Every other year, there's always been something. I've not been there for all the rounds. Or like, I mind, I was leading the championship 1 year, got to the last race of the season, the bike died as I was leading the race. I was absolutely gutted when that happened. But yeah, I finally done it. Two championships under the belt now. As I said earlier, I can only keep getting better from there. I also ended up getting the pleasure to ride for the Isle of Man team in the Celtic Match races, as I think there was one of their boys had a bike issue, so I got to go out and help them out with that, which was brilliant.
And winning those championships, Callum, can you put into words, with everything that we've been talking about and what goes into to even getting you there, what does that mean to you?
It means absolutely everything. Like, obviously, how last year went with Isle of Man, and then how everything's gone this year with Isle of Man, how it's been going in Scotland, the year couldn't have ended better for me. It's been fantastic. This has definitely been one of the best years of my race career, and I can genuinely only hope it can keep getting better. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it keeps getting better. We keep getting faster and seeing more and more results like this.
And because you've had that sort of success, does that make it easier when you're going out looking for sponsorship?
No, I wouldn't say it makes it easier, but it would help, obviously, having these results like championships. If you've not got any championships under you, you're trying to get sponsorship, then it'd be harder. Whereas at least you can tell people, I'm a champion on this bike and that. It would help, I suppose. But I've not noticed any of that yet, anyway.
And how is that side of things for you, that financial support?
I mean, obviously, there could always be more, but the support that I get from everyone is absolutely unbelievable. If it wasn't for the people that helped me, I would not be able to do any of it. If I was just on my own, it wouldn't be happening. There's so many people that put money into my racing or put money into what my dad does and that. The help is unbelievable. I can't thank everyone enough. Yeah, without any of you, it wouldn't be happening, so.
And we were just talking about your dad not being particularly impressed with your reading of the race regulations. What's his sort of advice to you in general, given his experience so far?
He's always helped me and everything, but it's not like giving me advice. He kind of lets me try and figure things out for myself. But yeah, the one bit of strong advice he's given me for next year is read the regs properly. So I think I'd better take that bit of advice and do that this year.
Did he find any sort of issues with that side of things?
He probably just got my mum to help him. Which I think is exactly what I'm going to do.
And when it comes to putting the bikes together, obviously you sort of mentioned that you've already got your sights on what you're going to be riding next year. How hands-on are you with the mechanical side of things?
That's another point where I'm very, very lucky, is because I'm not very mechanically minded at all. I'm more of a band from the toolbox kind of guy. There was a race at East Knockhill where I decided to try and do something myself, which resulted in me having a jammed open throttle and it came off at a chicane. So yeah, especially with the bikes to the Isle of Man, I try and not fiddle with them because I'm probably just going to make things worse. But that's where I'm really lucky that I've got people like my dad who's there. We've got my pal Finlay. He's a brilliant mechanic. He now works as a motorbike mechanic as well, but he was a truck mechanic. And then obviously Alistair Cowan, definitely the best person I could have around me. He knows absolutely everything there is about the bikes. If I know that Alistair's done it, I know it's going to be right. if I did something myself, then going down Bray Hill, I'm going to be thinking the whole time, is this done right? Is this going to be okay or whatever? Whereas I know that Alice or Finlay or something has done it, and the engine's like slicks prepared, the engines, all this stuff. Like, in my head, it's something I don't need to even think about. All I need to think about is riding that bike, because I know everyone's going to be mint, because these boys have got it under control and they know exactly what they're doing.
So if you're not directly involved in that side of things, then what are you doing? How do you spend your time before getting out for a qualifying or race?
I'll usually just be trying to keep my revision up. Obviously, I'm trying to keep my fitness up as well. So I've got a really physical job, luckily, which does keep me out at the gym, fitting tractor tires and lorry tires and all that. But I need to keep doing things like going for runs and all that stuff. I mean, I might slack off that over the winter, but I do need to pick back up. Then just revision, just constant revision for the circuit. There's a long track, obviously, over 200 corners and all that. You need to know what's coming next. You can't just be thinking about where you are at that time. You need to be thinking about what's coming. Like, so it's more and more revision.
So how do you revise it?
Usually I'm watching a lot of YouTube videos. YouTube's definitely a really good one for doing that. I also really like when I'm on the island to be able to go out and do laps in the car. I find that helps. And it's even like when we were doing it with the instructors, they tell you things that if there's a section you're not quite understanding, sometimes it's better to stop, get out of the car and look back at it. So I looked at the wrong way around the track and all that, and it kind of helps make things make sense, which I didn't really understand until I did it, but you just actually got to go out there and do it yourself. Like, there's loads of times that I'll be going over again many weekends between now and August again for going back out, just me and my car or something, or I'll be going to go do practice laps, because there's no better way of revising it than actually being there and seeing it.
And you already mentioned that TT is on your horizon at some point. Do you know when you'll be TT ready?
Personally, I'd like to be in there the next couple of years. But then again, that's all just down to financial stuff. And then obviously how well I keep doing. I just need to keep pushing myself, but not too far. I need to keep my head together as well. Like, I don't want to get overconfident and go out there and make a mistake. Just need to take it step by step and make sure you do everything right. Learn it perfectly so I can be one of the fast ones. But yeah, financial is definitely a big thing of it as well. But I just got to keep trying to get as good results as I can in the mountains, and hopefully more people want to come and help me, which would be really nice.
And has the TT ever been on your dad's radar?
TT was always something my dad wanted to do, but the problem, my dad, because obviously he runs the Heads Up Youth Development charity, so every time my dad had been over racing Isleman, he wasn't just here to race, he was here looking after groups of kids as well, so he'd come off the bike and he'd have to be straight into thinking, like, right, what are we doing with the kids the rest of the night, what are we going to do for tea and all this. He never had the chance to just focus purely on the track and everything, so I think he'd always wanted to do the TT, but it wasn't possible for him.
Tell us about Heads Up then and how that all came about.
I'm not exactly sure how it all came about. I'm pretty sure it started as a joke on a mountaintop with a police officer. My dad was in the mountain rescue, and then him and a copper ended up getting talking about something as a joke, and it suddenly actually ended up happening. It was like kids from anywhere. It could be school, it could even just be like the police or something, or just like they want something to go and do, like, because my dad works with these groups throughout the day, every day of the week, doing different things. You'll go away and do events and all that, but on a Friday night from 6:30 to 9:00 at night, he'll open the workshop in Forfar, and anyone that comes to any of these groups, you don't even have to come to the groups, if you've just heard about Heads Up or whatever, you can just come along. It's a really open and friendly place to go, and the guards are open. You come in, you don't even have to work on bikes, you can just use it as some place to hang out and chill out and have a good time. But then obviously there's the bikes, we'll be in the garage working on things, and people that come to like the Friday nights and all that, the ones that have been for a while, they get to come to things like the bike race, and whereas they'll come to East Fortune, Knock Hill, Isle of Man, and they'll be there running the bikes, building them, prepping them and all that. So it's brilliant. I wish I got to do something like that when I was at school. I mean, that would have been amazing. Again, to go away and do this stuff, I think it's brilliant. I don't know how my dad's managed to do it. Like, he's definitely really good.
And we know that school is not for everybody, and to have a group like that is just amazing. And yeah, you must be really proud of your dad for being so involved in that.
Yeah, it's definitely hats off to him for being able to do that. And like, so when he was even pushing himself to do things like that, oh man, having the big groups of kids over there, and he's looking after these kids whilst racing the most dangerous racetrack in the world and everything, it's like, I couldn't have done that. Definitely not. So hats off to him for that. And I know he's had good help from a lot of good friends and a lot of people like supporting it. And without these kind of people, like, none of it would have been possible. But my dad's definitely the key to all.
And I wonder how many of those kids he's inspired maybe to follow in his and your footsteps too.
Well, I'd say that like, there's so many of them have gone from doing nothing really. Now they're like, there's a bunch that'll be full-time, time served, like mechanics and everything. I know a few of those. There's even a few people like that were there the original groups years ago, like the first time it ever run, and he still comes to Isle of Man now. Like there's some people that still go over off their own back, stay over there for the 2 weeks and help out. And he's a boy, Ross. He's a really good pal of ours, but he was one of the original youth from the charity when it first started back in the old workshop and everything. And he still to this day goes over to the old man and helps out with like Emmett, and he runs his bike with him, does the fuel stops. So Ross was doing my fuel stop with him for me, and I'm pretty sure he was there for the first ever time my dad done the old man as well. He's late 20s now.
And in terms then of you and where we are, as I say, it's sort of October time as we're talking, it's approaching the end of the season, really. Give us a sense of what the next few weeks and months look like for you.
For the next few weeks and months, I'm just going to be working, sadly. I'm working and keep revision up for the track, and that is pretty much it. The winter is not a very exciting time. I'll be out on my trail bike and all that in the hills and stuff, keeping some bike time. I wouldn't mind seeing about going out on a motocrosser, but that's just money that I don't need to be spending, so I think I'll just stick with the trail bikes.
Yeah, I just wondered what you're like when you can't get out on your bike.
Oh, it's horrible. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I'm like a dog stuck in a house. I just want to ride all the time. So that's why I've got the trail bikes that I started on when I was younger. I've still got the exact same first trail bike. We've got a couple more now as well, like, but I just love getting out on the bikes in the hills. We're really lucky with the land that we get use of up here. Dad's got an outdoor centre that he was building for the charity as well to give people a chance to go away and do things like they wouldn't usually get to do. So you've got like we've got the bikes up there, we've got the canoes and everything, like loads of stuff. Proper outdoor centre. Still in the middle of getting built, like so we've got the whole run of like Glen Ness. I can get right up in the mountains and all that on my trail bike. It's amazing. I know that not many people would get the experience of doing what I get to do on my trail bike and getting to see the things that I see on that bike. It's really cool.
Beautiful part of the world as well.
Oh, definitely. It's right up Glen Ness here, and so you get a brilliant view. So we're obviously on the East Coast here. That's absolutely amazing. So that's kind of what my winter looks like. It's just working, revising, and out on the trail bike.
And when you're talking about watching those YouTube videos, do you pick any particular riders, or are you quite, keen on seeing a variety of them?
I think the better the variety that you keep watching, the better, because you don't want to just focus on one person because they might do some bits different than other people. So I think just picking a variety and then you find your own way around from that and whatever works best for you, because you don't want to just try and copy exactly what somebody else is doing, because whatever somebody else is doing will work for them, but your riding style could be different. So you just need to figure it out yourselves. You don't want to get stuck watching the same thing over and over and over. You want to keep changing rider, changing bike and all that.
And I guess, you're talking about coming over in the next few months as well to do more laps, because the course does change, doesn't it? Work's done on various parts of it and whatever. And so that constant need to keep it refreshed in your mind is crucial.
Yeah, definitely. Like you'd be over 1 year and there'd be fresh tarmac in one place. It comes back the next, it'd be completely retarred again in different places, or there'd be bits that are more bumpy now. That's why you need to come over, especially when it gets to around TT time when they start getting all the signs and all that out and all the stands and everything, because then you can see the track as it's going to be when you're riding it. So it's obviously good going over the winter and everything as well, but the closer to the TT time, it's really good to go over too. Because that's when you know they're not going to be doing much more work on the roads unless they really have to. You need to make sure you know what's changed on the track and everything, what to expect before you get to it on the bike.
And social media, we know, is a crucial part of a racer's life nowadays. How do you find that side of things?
I'm not very good with social media. I'm very inactive on it. I've not even put a post up from coming back from Isle of Man. And I'm probably going to do that this week now that we've mentioned that. It's not a bad idea. I need to get more active on social media. My dad's really good with it. He's got the heads up Facebook and Instagram account and everything. But I do have my own one, but I'm very inactive on it. I'm not very savvy with all that stuff. But I do need to get more into posting and keeping people up to date with what I'm doing.
Because, when you're thinking about getting your presence out there, particularly because you want to make this your full-time occupation, I suppose being seen is just really important.
Exactly. You need to have that, especially nowadays, you need to have that social media presence. That's kind of what everything is now. That's what everyone sees anything nowadays, is social media.
So where can people follow you then, Callum?
They can get me on Instagram or Facebook. I've got an Instagram. It's I'm underscore Callum 13 underscore. Not an easy one to find, but I'll probably be the only Callum part out there. Facebook, obviously, it was Callum Pert. So hopefully, I'll do in the next couple of days, I'll get a post up about how the year's gone and everything, and everybody will check that out.
Wonderful. Well, we'll put the links to your Instagram and Facebook page. And I was just thinking, obviously, you've got Christmas coming up, and one thing I probably wouldn't buy you is Lego if you're not very good at reading instructions.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I need to get better at reading those regulations. I think my dad will go mental at me if I do that again this year. We got very lucky that I'll end up working out this year, but I don't want to risk that again. I want to make sure everything is perfect, because I don't want to ruin anything or cock anything up. It's the best place in the world to race, and I'd be really, really annoyed if I got messed up because I didn't read something properly.
Yeah, I think roping mum into helping is probably a good idea. And actually, you need to tell your dad that he needs to join us on this podcast as well, because it sounds like he's got a lot that he could share with us too. But been brilliant talking to you, Callum. Thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you back here next year.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Callum Pert, who by his own admission might not be too good at reading regulations, but he's blooming brilliant at riding a bike. We're looking forward to seeing what he does here at the MGP in 2026, and hopefully in the not too distant future at the TT as well. The links to his Facebook and Instagram pages are on the Journey to a Dream podcast page, so do give him a follow. And the Journey to a Dream series is brought to you by the Manx Motorcycle Club, which runs the MGP here on the island, and also the Andreas Racing Association, and I'm so grateful for their support. And thank you so much for listening. Do check out some of the other episodes in the series. And if you'd like to get in touch, my email address is bethesby@manxradio.com. And so until next time, take care. Bye bye.